This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is CoronaCast, a podcast all about the coronavirus. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan. It's Tuesday, the 18th of August.
So Norman, we're hearing that the government's in advanced negotiations with a couple of different companies about a vaccine, securing a supply of vaccine for Australia, even though we don't actually know which vaccines are going to work yet. What's involved in this process of making sure that we can get it once we know what works?
Well, there are two ways of getting it. One is to enter into an advance purchase deal, which is what America has done with several manufacturers. So, for example, with the Oxford vaccine, I think they've pre-booked 300 million doses. The European community has pre-booked 400 million doses. Then there's doses they've got to give to Gavi for low-income countries. It doesn't leave much, and then Britain's got to get some. So it doesn't leave much up out of their first billion doses. So straight, you know, and that's the front of the queue. There is an Indian manufacturer setting up to manufacture some of these vaccines, in particular the Oxford one. Last week on 7:30, the Professor Terry Nolan from the University of Melbourne was saying that he's reasonably optimistic there's going to be more than one vaccine available in a reasonably short space of time. In other words, this year, sometime towards the end of this year. And therefore, there probably will be plenty of doses to go around. But that doesn't mean to say that we're home and hosed with that. Now, it's believed that the negotiations that the government's doing are with the Oxford group, but we don't have manufacturing capacity for that kind of vaccine in Australia. It's not the sort of vaccines that CSL use, but we have got expertise in vaccine production. And the easiest way to do this is to license the technology and manufacture in Australia so that we can guarantee that. So in other words, we're not taking supply away from anywhere else. We would be manufacturing the vaccine for our own use. It does mean, of course, that if it doesn't work, we've got to find vaccine from elsewhere. But you know, it's quite likely that one of the vaccines which will be found to work will be the Oxford vaccine, but it's not guaranteed.
Right. So like science has got a lot of different irons in the fire here, and some companies have decided to back a particular one and start making that, so that the one that you mentioned, the Oxford one, has a billion orders already in. What if it doesn't work? Do they just tip it all down the drain?
Yep, it just goes to the junk heap. That's the risk that they're taking. So the least risk for Australia is to license the technology and pay a license fee per vaccine without pre-purchasing the vaccine so that we can produce it if it works. And in the hope that we can tool up pretty quickly, probably even test that in advance. And you know, they might want to take a risk and produce the vaccine ahead of time, the way they're doing in the United Kingdom or whatever. The other way that the Australian government can do it is pre-purchase vaccines. And what America's doing with some vaccines is saying, well, we will guarantee you X billion dollars or X hundred million dollars if your vaccine is approved for registration. So there's a caveat on it as well. But it does give those companies the ability to borrow money or gain grants or other things because they've got guaranteed income should it be successful.
Can we just take a step back for a second and talk about what it actually takes to get a vaccine from the lab benchtop into the little glass vial that you see at the pharmacy, which is what they then stick in your arm?
The problem is that with the vaccines that are most likely to be successful initially, it's novel technology. And the novel technology is on both sides of the equation. There's this adjuvant and there's the actual bit of the virus itself. So with the Oxford vaccine, the adjuvant that's going to amplify the immune response is actually an adenovirus from a chimpanzee. The Russian and Chinese vaccines are also adenovirus vaccines. Now that requires new technology to develop it and to develop it safely. And then you've got the technology to produce the bit of the coronavirus that you're going to use to stimulate the specific immune response. With the Moderna one in America, the mRNA vaccine, which is a little packet of genetic messaging which goes into the cell to produce a bit of the virus to stimulate the immune response, there's no adjuvant. All you need is the mRNA, but that requires special manufacturing technology as well. So Australia acquiring the license for that technology would be acquiring know-how that's going to be very handy for Australia into the future and makes us independent of other supplies overseas, rather than necessarily pre-purchasing large numbers of the doses from overseas in the hope that they're going to be approved. Now, America's done a couple of things. They've pre-purchased unconditionally some vaccine, and they've pre-purchased some vaccines on the basis of them having been approved. and they're just hedging their bets. And a lot, you know, some money might well be wasted in this, and some vaccines which are being pre-manufactured, such as the Oxford vaccine, may have to be junked if it doesn't work. One hopes not.
So let's talk about New Zealand now. And they've looked at the people who were part of that outbreak and looked at the genetic structure of the virus that they have, and they've determined that it's definitely not come from New Zealand's hotel quarantine.
Yes, that's right. They've been doing gene sequencing on the viruses in this new outbreak, which is really quite troubling. And what they've found is that it's not from what they called managed isolation, which is what we would call hotel quarantine, people coming in from overseas and being isolated, that none of the people who've been positive with the virus in that circumstance have been the source of this virus. They now know it from the genetic family tree of the virus. What they don't know, at least at the time that we're recording this coronacast, is they don't know where it did come from. And all these cases, pretty much, I think with some exceptions or a couple under investigation, have come from the same source. So it's one source, by and large, so it seems, and so a single cluster that's growing and escaping out into the community. So the question is, where did it come from? And two theories really at the moment, probably more than two, but one is that it could have been there. It was called a cryptic virus, which is spreading through the community and you don't know it. But 4 months is a heck of a long time for the coronavirus to be spreading through the community and you haven't discovered it. That's highly unlikely. And the other is that people are paying a bit more attention to the fact that maybe you've got highly tainted cold storage material coming into New Zealand and it's been caught from that in a cold storage facility and then spread from there. And you know, people who are in the know say you cannot discount that. That is a possibility. Whether or not that's from Victoria or from another high prevalence country is a matter of debate and it's still to be shown. But that's what people are thinking about.
Can they not compare the gene sequence of the people in New Zealand with the strains that are circulating in Victoria at the moment?
I did ask that and they didn't know the answer or weren't willing to give it to me.
So that's still an open question.
Yep.
So if it did come on cold storage, what are the implications of that for other countries?
So there are some implications of this for the rest of the world and particularly Australia. One is you can't talk about eradication of the virus. It's just impossible to eradicate this virus. What you can talk about is elimination of spread. While you might say you've eliminated spread, you've still got to have social isolation and taking a lot of care. You cannot return entirely to normal. And I think New Zealand thought they could. We've talked about it in Coronacast that maybe you could, but it's just too risky. I was actually in the ACT over the weekend at the Canberra Writers Festival. And it's interesting, the ACT, my anecdotal impression was that even though they've had no spread, Canberrans are actually maintaining their social distance and being incredibly careful, more careful than I've noticed in New South Wales in particular, which is where I'm based. Second implication is that if this is proven to come in on cold storage goods, wherever from, that means that every country in the world is going to have to be careful with imported goods that are imported through cold storage and probably screen it for the virus. So if it comes from India, South America, the UK, the US, you're just going to have to be really careful. And maybe New Zealand is going to have to be careful if it comes from Victoria. That has enormous implications for international trade, particularly island countries where there are limited sources for new viruses coming in.
Well, that's all we've got time for on Coronacast today. If you like us, you can tell a friend and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you can.
And if you want to ask a question, go to abc.net.au/coronavirus. Go to Ask Us Your Questions and fill in the form and do mention Coronacast so we can pick it up. And you can also leave us a comment if you like. And we'll see you tomorrow.
See you then.
Everyone was looking for Nicola Gobbo, the woman who became known as Lawyer X.
The woman at the centre of Victoria's biggest legal scandal.
Since going into hiding, the only interview she's done is with the ABC. And now we can tell her full story.
People were going to be murdered.
She was working both sides of the fence.
I will make a point of holding those who did this to account.
The Informer, a gripping new season of the hit podcast Trace. Hear it on the ABC Listen app.